Welcome to another tale from George's Pocketbook. George is a frontline UK response officer dedicated to fighting crime, resolving family disputes in minutes that have taken years to break down, and getting in the faces of the social underclass. All events are real, and names and places have been changed to protect the innocent, not so innocent, and plain stupid.
The area car Mike 1 and a response car Mike 2-1, crewed by George and his latest probationer, had both taken a call to a personal attack alarm that had been set off in a house in a large suburban residential area. As the two cars flew through early evening traffic with their blue lights flashing and their sirens playing different tunes to each other so that other drivers would realise there were two cars running, not just the one, the crews were receiving updates. One such update sent chills through both crews. The address was a listed Operation Trident location. The occupants were somehow at risk from attackers with firearms. A Trojan armed response unit was already tasked and running to join them, as were the duty officer Inspector Bridgestock and a skipper to act as scene controller. The area car and response car arrived on scene, having run silent for the last quarter of a mile, and the crews deployed to create a discreet cordon to keep the house under observation without being seen. After a few minutes, during which George realised that he was actually watching the wrong house and finally crawled into position to see the right one, the Trojans arrived, followed soon after by the inspector and sergeant, along with a dog van and a couple of other response cars. At the rendezvous point, Inspector Bridgestock eyed the unusually all-female Trojan team as they swaggered over toward him. "I take it you're armed then," he muttered. It was the turn of the armed response officers to look at the duty officer in a less than enthusiastic manner, although to their credit they refrained from voicing an answer. After a swift briefing, during which they were filled in with the latest intelligence on the address that the control room had managed to gather together for them, everyone was deployed. A Trojan, assisted by a pair of local officers, were able to get into the back garden unseen and cover the rear of the house, while the remainder gathered at the front door. The area was kept secure with road closures out of sight of the house. Eventually everyone was in place and ready. The front door was opened with the aid of an enforcer ram, and the entry team flooded through the front door, securing each room as they went, quickly reaching the kitchen where they found two CID detectives sitting at a table with the occupier, enjoying a nice cup of tea. Apparently the personal attack alarm had been playing up, and the two detectives had come down to check it, not realising that they'd set it off during their fiddling. The governor launched into a lecture about the use of personal radios and the value of actually turning them on so that their users would be aware of what was happening around them in the outside world, and possibly even preventing situations like this one. After which, everyone, including George, trooped back out of the house for a debrief back at the station. Sadly, the day's catalogue of disasters was not yet complete for George. As the queue of officers returning to their cars turned the corner of the house, most of them noticed the enormous puddle in the road beside the curb, left by the previous night's rain. George didn't. Caught in his own little world for a moment, he failed to notice the car that drove through the deepest part of the puddle just as he passed it. He didn't miss the curtain of water that the car created, nor did the water miss him. George stood stunned, drenched, literally from head to foot, while his colleagues, including Inspector Bridgestock, gathered around him. Standing in a spreading pool of water, he turned to his governor with his arms stretched wide, seemingly trying to invoke some kind of a divine intervention, and cried, "I don't believe it." It took several minutes for Mr. Bridgestock to stagger to his car, despite the assistance of his sergeant. The two were laughing so hard that they actually looked like a pair of drunks on their way home from an evening of drunken revelry. In fact, it was several minutes before either of them was able to stop laughing long enough for the tears in their eyes to clear and allow them to drive from the scene.